All right, everybody, welcome back into Mining Stock Daily on this Tuesday. It was really the headline news out of this morning's morning briefing here on Mining Stock Daily. We had some M&A news out of the gold sector. Mako Mining will acquire Gold Source Resource Mines. Mako Mining trades on the venture with MKO. Gold Source Mines trades on the venture with GXS. And Gold Source has been working in Guyana the last couple of years with the Eagle Mountain Gold Project there. We're going to talk about that PEA that just published earlier this year. But happy to welcome in Mako Mining CEO Akiba Leishman. Akiba, welcome to the podcast. Good to see you.
No, thanks, Trevor. Always a pleasure. Yeah.
This was big news. We were chatting a little bit before we press record. This is really the first big acquisition Mako Mining has made since really its inception as Mako as we know it. You're diversifying your jurisdiction. You're adding another project, you had to go out and find interesting partners that see eye to eye with you and Mako, and you found that, and some people that you have actually worked with in the past.
Oh yeah, and I think that was an essential part of this transaction. So for people that didn't spend time reading the press release this morning, this is not just an acquisition. I called it a partnership in my quote, and it really is. So in addition to us buying Gold Source for their primary project, which is Eagle Mountain in Guyana, the teams have known each other for multiple decades. So for those that don't really know the history of our operating team, our chief operating officer, Jesse Munoz, before he was involved in Mako and our predecessors, his family used to run an engineering, procurement, and construction management firm called Sonoran Resources. And they were hired to do the PCM, so the procurement and construction management job for the original Silvercrest, so Silvercrest Mines, not Silvercrest Metals. This is going back to the late aughts when that was getting up and running. And that was when he had an opportunity to meet at that point in time, the COO of Silvercrest, Eric Fear. By the way, he's a fantastic individual, really, really sharp guy. He's a mining engineer and a geologist. Certainly one of my favorite people in the mining space. And then he and Jesse really like hit it off when Silvercrest was getting up and running. So for those that I'm sure everybody's kind of aware of the Silvercrest outcome, right? So the open pit heap leach transitioned into the underground. The underground turned into an acquisition by First Majestic with a spinco called Silvercrest Metals. And then Eric is kind of running that fantastically successful and profitable operation just a few tens of kilometers away from the original Santa Elena. So he and Jesse maintained contact throughout all those years. Eric was also involved as the executive chairman of Gold Source. And what I like to tell people, like in terms of our acquisition, I've said this from the start, going back all the way since 2019, that Mako is always too small for its own good, is that when we established kind of our three-stage platform on how we were going to be developing the mine, so we wanted to start as a bootstrap, start out at 500 tons per day, develop the highest grade open pit mine in the world, use all that fantastic cash flow that's coming from the mine, which by the way, so it's pretty extraordinary what we're doing right now in Nicaragua. We'll report our Q4 earnings over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks. And you can see just in some of the operating results that we've put out, it doesn't take like a genius or a mathematician to put together, is that the mine was generating in excess of US $16 million of cash flow on a pre-tax basis coming from the mine, which was able to cleanse the balance sheet and do everything we needed to do. But even as a small scale mine, it was really our objective to use that cash and then grow organically to get bigger. It's why we developed the civil works to make the expansion to 1,000 tons a day when we had the appropriate resource. And also when the company was running on its rails, to put ourselves into an opportunity or have an opportunity to go and do external growth. Now, our main challenge when it came with doing share-based M&A is that, like, at the end of the day, we have a lot of critics, and some of the critics are fair, some of the critics are unfair about us. But putting myself in the shoes of the fair critics out there, is that we have a particularly difficult ore body to model over at San Albino. So if you want to do it right, if you want to actually get the right resource, be able to mine it, because at the end of the day, we're not doing this to mine the markets. We're doing this to actually generate cash flow from the mine. You really do need to do a lot of drilling in order to prove out any sizable resource. So if you wanted to be honest about how you're going to be modeling and developing your resources and certainly your economic studies about this. It takes a lot of drilling to get that done, which basically means you're never going to have a long mine life. So when you're dealing with, let's say, the fair critics and the fair skeptics out there in the marketplace, it's always kind of difficult to have these situations where we have a small resource, they have a large resource, we have like no economic study, they have a feasibility study. You don't get into these conversations where on paper you can wind up doing something that makes at least visceral sense. The reason why the relationships here, both between Jesse and Eric, between me and Steve, mattered a lot is that we knew each other well enough, not just to shake hands and say, all right, everybody can have a beer together and let's merge. It was not it at all. In fact, this is probably the longest diligence I think in the history of an acquirer versus an acquiree, where the acquiree spent more time diligencing us versus the other way around. What the relationship accomplished was at least having the ability to dedicate time to understand what we're doing. And then when people came down to site, they saw what we were doing, the professionalism of our operating team, obviously the history with Jesse, how we handle things from a safety perspective, from an environmental safety and security perspective, from a business perspective, from an exploration perspective, it starts to say, you know what, this makes sense. And the type of asset that we have over in Guyana with Eagle Mountain, you know what, if we had these guys and this balance sheet and this mine and everything come together, you know what, this makes sense as a combined company. So I use the term hand in glove in my quote in the press release, and it really is. So this allows Mako to do a couple of things. Obviously, from a prima facie perspective, we now actually have a larger asset that's going to be developed into the portfolio, where the cash flow coming from our mine is more than capable of funding all of our big boy exploration over in Nicaragua, all of the big boy exploration over in Guyana, and making a substantial amount for the equity contribution to go and build Eagle Mountain when the construction decision is ready, probably sometime in late 2025. But more importantly, it fixes a lot of the deficiencies that both companies had. Like for us, it was jurisdictional risk and inherently just not having a large resource just because of the nature of the ore body. And for them, even though they're extremely technically competent group between Eric and Steve and Giannis and Kevin and everybody that goes with the team that's coming on board with Mako over there, what it does for them is that it allows them to have the breadth of experience that we have from our operating team. Obviously, going through a build out of an almost identical flow sheet to what they're going to be building out, albeit on a larger scale, that we went through over the pandemic, that we can actually apply in less crazy times this go around. And then to actually get everybody together to know that both of our deficiencies kind of go away when we merge. And it puts us into a great position to do this again with other people where we don't necessarily have the relationships that will allow them to invest in the time and overcome the skepticism. Is that now we'll have a real company where we can actually face people just based on what we can contribute on public data.
Okay, so a lot, I've got a lot of follow-up questions just based on that, but thank you for kind of that walkthrough. And I think a lot of people will listen to that and start, being able to put those pieces together why this deal, makes sense, at least from Mako's perspective. But listen, Gold Source Mining, I know you can't necessarily speak on their behalf, but the management's fiduciary duty is doing the best thing for its shareholders to create value for them. And obviously, you can do that through M&A. I mean, that's a great way to do it in this sector. But it is, and you're right, Mako's not without its criticism. And you and I have talked about that for the last couple of years when you come on the pod from time to time. And so Gold Source Management will have to answer that and why this acquisition and merger into Mako makes sense, knowing that you guys do things a little bit differently than 99% of the market. Speaking with the manager from Gold Source, are you expecting any sort of, not necessarily pushback, but just kind of constructive criticism on this deal, knowing that those shareholders will be coming into as Mako shareholders?
Yeah, I would break that into three parts. There's timing, number one. So I think when we started out with Mako, there really wasn't a clear track record within the gold mining space. Like Wexford has an extraordinary track record in natural resource development. For those that aren't aware, the controlling shareholder of Mako also is a creator of one of the biggest oil companies on the planet named Diamondback Energy. They just announced a few months ago an acquisition of $30 billion to make them the third largest player in the Permian Basin, a strategic area of not only the United States, but the world. And actually going back to Guyana is now becoming like a strategic area, albeit we're on the gold side over there. So while people tend to be on the insular side of things, on the gold mining sector, where they don't really take other industries and other people's successes and try to apply it for here, that's fair, right? So we had a lot of like open question marks in 2018, 19, and 20. The pandemic happened. We had like a reasonably successful full build out. The early part of 2022, we had some operating difficulties with metallurgy. So all of those things are like entirely fair criticisms. Like, well, who are these Mako guys? Are they really successful on the gold mining side? A lot of that has gone away. They kind of see now that San Albino has done basically what we said it was going to do from the start, both in terms of operating success, the ability to get this from a cash flow perspective, and the ability to do like the basic science and exploration to prove that this really is an orogenic gold mining camp. I think that question from a timing perspective has been answered. Then on the deal side, I would break that into a further two components. There's the industrial logic, and then there's the terms, the price and the financials. So from the industrial logic perspective, is that now that we've actually answered that first question is like, do these Mako guys know what they're doing? I think most people kind of think the answer is yes now, or that could have been an open question mark 2 or 3 years ago. The industrial logic, I think, is clear, right? So here you have company with cash flow, company with a deep operating team, company with the ability to build mines like this with internal expertise, being merged with another company that has a mine that needs the breadth of operating expertise. It needs the cash flow and the capital. And by the way, like a financial backer like Wexford, who's always a huge asset to have kind of standing in the background, that makes like sense. I don't think there's like anybody that's going to say, you know what, Gold Source was never the type of company where I break investors in this industry into two parts. And I don't mean to criticize one side or the other. I think they're both really, really valid investment approaches. One is the guys trying to get in early to get the big discovery and score, and then eventually that gets taken out by a major. And there are people that do this with tremendous success and like clear probabilities that are, and you should invest in people like that. That's not us. And there's the other end of the spectrum where I would say it's probably coming more from a capital discipline side of things, where you have investors who really want the mining industry to eventually turn into mines and then try to bootstrap and be scalable and low capital intensity, which is also, it's always a good thing to say, but usually the types of projects that fall into that camp are really crap, right? And it just doesn't work. And there's a lot of explorations that are really like chasing a pipe dream, and that doesn't work. So they're like people at the top end of the spectrum on the, let's call it the explorationist camp, like I'm gonna say nice things about like some of you, the Lundins, they're amazing. That's like their camp. And then you have like people on the other side, like a Silvercrest. I mean, that those really are kind of unicorns in terms of scalable and low capital intensity type projects. Now, what San Albino was something very similar to that. What Gold Source is something very similar to that. So from an industrial logic, this is the type of combination that investors in that particular camp would love to see. And then there's like the terms, right? So the terms were discussed pretty frequently. I'm obviously going to negotiate firm on my behalf. I can say from the Gold Source side of things, they were very, very ball busters in their negotiations as well. And you know what? I think we both agreed on the industrial logic side of things, and they came up with a deal. And it's now my job to give Gold Source the ammunition to say why this is a great deal from that perspective. It's my job to tell my shareholders about this. So I think the valuation will wind up taking care of itself. But I think the industrial logic, I don't think I've seen any criticism about this, which I think is something that you would not have seen 2 years ago when there was open question marks. So timing, industrial logic, in terms, I think we've answered the first two, and the third is like it's really our job to bang the Mako bandwagon for the next few weeks.
Let me dig into the terms here a little bit, and it's funny because you're right that I haven't seen a whole lot of, banter or anything about the terms of this deal. I mean, it could be back, just could it be it was a good deal for both sides of the shareholders? Well, I absolutely could it just be continued apathy in the gold mining space? Could be that too. But so Eagle Mountain, it does have a PEA out. The latest resource, 1.2 million ounces gold indicated at 1.18 grams per ton. There's an inferred resource of just over 500,000 ounces at 0.98 grams per ton gold. That project economics with that latest PEA, I think it was published in January, I saw $292 million after tax, NPV of 5% with a 57% IRR. That IRR number looks really nice. But this the price tag here under those terms here, Akiba, is about just over was it $33 million? That's implied equity of this deal. Is that what I saw?
Right. So I mean, the end of the day, the way you got to look at it is it's an exchange ratio, right? So you're going to get 0.22 shares of Mako. I'm telling people right now is that there is a lot of similarities in terms of what this company looks like today versus what Diamondback looked like in 2011. I was reading like a book about development. I don't want to compare ourselves to the Rockefellers, but like in the development of Standard Oil, it was the same thing. Is like everybody was asked to do you want cash or shares of Standard Oil, and most people took the cash. Obviously, the people that took the shares became multimillionaires at the end of the day. This is not just about the notional price tag. This is about what this company looks like on a pro forma basis between the assets and what the platform is capable of doing now that a lot of the it's called the deficiencies that both sides kind of brought to the table are kind of disappeared just because of the industrial logic of this asset. So I think it's important to look at splits in terms of what people bring to the table and where it is. All the holistics that come from that. But I really would not focus on the notional price tag because it's a stock. Stocks are going to move. And it's going to go up if you're successful, and it's going to go down if you're not.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I guess we can go back. So it's a the terms are 40, just about 41% based on spot of each equity, 52.1% based on both Mako's and Gold Source's 20-day volume weighted average. I mean, those are premiums we have not seen in deals like this in quite some time. Are you setting, do you feel like why is that 52% of volume weighted moving average? I mean, that I don't remember the last time we've seen 50% in these types of deals. And if you had to go to the negotiating table and you're telling me Gold Source Mines were ball busters in this deal, they must have wanted more than 52%, which is
Absolutely.
absolutely nuts. But I mean, I mean, I guess you can make, I guess it's, I don't know if it's not criticism, it's just like open conversation. Like these are premiums you would get in a really healthy junior gold equity market. And I can make the argument we're not quite there yet. Gold's looking good, but the equity market hasn't shown those signs of life. I mean, how do you tell me a little bit about those negotiations? I'm sure that is something that had to be said.
Yeah, no, and again, we're kind of looking at the path that the companies are going to be taking. So I'm putting myself in their shoes, which is actually kind of like the way that because a lot of people fall into the trap of looking at like price to NAV type and like these weird metrics in the mining space. Because one of the things that price to NAV fails to really account for until you take two more steps is that, all right, let's assume that you're not going to have like a richer valuation than what you're trading at. How exactly are you going to finance this and get into production and turn this into a cash flow? And if you work out a model that way, the price to NAV all of a sudden becomes almost like a meaningless figure. Because if you don't have the ability to actually get your valuation up, you're going to kind of get stuck in this kind of financing trap. So that's part of it. And it's not even a Gold Source issue. I think that's like a 95% of the junior space type issue. Now, from our perspective, it's kind of almost the complete opposite. It's all right, here we know that we have a management team that we trust. We have a management team that actually is very good from a technical perspective. So the technical data we trust. We have a mining jurisdiction where for very real and political reasons, they want to support the mining industry, very, very similar to Nicaragua in that regard. So we know that we have the ability to advance this, get this permitted, and make a construction decision. So flip the whole price to NAV situation on its head is like, if I buy you, I'm no longer looking at you as an in situ price per ounce or some sort of multiple on these weird metrics that the gold mining industry uses. I'm looking at you as a mine that's going to start at the end of 2026. And in doing that, it flips everything from a valuation perspective on its head with somebody like a gold source, right? So you can trade at very, very small notional price to NAV multiples, which may actually be correct if you have to finance at those same multiples to get to the end of the day. And then once you actually start looking at this as a discounted cash flow from an operating mine that has the ability to fund this through cash flow and external sources, with the backing of a shareholder like Wexford, instantaneously, this looks like a part of basically baked in, I'm using that term a little bit loosely, but baked in growth for what this is going to look like. It changes everything. So for us, it's not even about like a 40 or 50% premium. It's like for us, we can see what this is going to do to our resource base. We can see what this is going to do to our intermediate and long-term cash flow. We can see what this is going to be doing with all the bells and whistles that come from the platform as well that I discussed earlier. And to me, this was the from a Mako perspective, this was a pretty easy price to pay to capture everything that got brought to the table.
Okay, let's wrap this up, but I got to ask you about, you know, obviously we'll wait. This deal's, you know, see if this deal gets done. With, you know, there's a number of things that got to get done. There's a little bit of arbitrage there, I would say, given to where Gold Source Mine's currently trading compared to where this deal is. So you can take that for what it's worth if you're listening and do some own research. But I want to ask you about Mako's strategy with this project going forward. Will you kind of partake in more of that traditional development, technical reporting type of work with Golden Eagle that you know, San Albino has not undertaken? We see a little bit more of a traditional approach.
Yeah, so like our approach was kind of like an output of the type of mind that we had, right? So it's like if you actually wanted, like, I get this criticism like, "Oh, how come Mako doesn't have a feasibility study?" Well, I can tell you why we don't have a feasibility study, right? We don't have a feasibility study because if we wanted to actually model the resource correct, spend the amount of money and time and drill it, and then spend the time to overlay that with everything that needed to be done through a feasibility study, we would have mined that area out by the time that anybody saw that book report. It happens to be an ore body that makes it very difficult for you to get ahead if you want to do it right. Do you know when this actually had like a long mine life, long resource, and a heuristic that people can wrap their head around from evaluation? It was back when it was Golden Rain. They had a PEA in 2015 that showed a 34-year mine life at a 250 ton per day pilot kind of schedule over here. But it was based on bullshit, right? It's like, okay, I can make you a book report on this, but it's like if you actually want to get the right data, because of the nature of our deposit, it's not going to work. Eagle Mountain is different. Like, by the way, Eagle Mountain is not like, it's not like simple, but it's not, it, I would say it fits more into the category of conventional. I have no issues with disclosure. I think our technical disclosure in terms of what happens over at Mako is impeccable. I put it up against like literally not, by the way, I think SilverCrest technical disclosure is amazing as well. I think it's kind of like a lodestar for how we report both technicals and financials too. But the vast majority of our industry sucks at both. And I actually think we do a pretty good job in terms of how we present technicals, both in news releases and our reports and our resources and how we go about this and our financials. And then if we had a deposit that we actually have the ability to to delineate long mine lives and do that, we'll do the same. And if we actually have time to put together a resource and a feasibility study, great. I love being able to disclose this. It helps me. I mean, think about how difficult my life was in an M&A mode when I have to like compare our small resource to somebody else's like feasibility study or whatever, right? It makes my life simple. Like think about the diversity of types of financings that I'll be able to get. So it's not like we try to avoid this. It was just like if you really wanted to do the brass tacks, the ore body that we had over at San Albino meant that the rational decision was how we behaved. It wasn't like we were acting irrationally. It was just because the geology in the ore body led to these decisions in how we kind of managed the business over the course of the last 5 years.
I've taken up a lot of your time, but I know it's in a lot of really important conversations and questions I think a lot of people are asking. Kiba, you never shy away from those questions, so I appreciate that very much. It's good to connect with you. It's been a long time. Congratulations on this news. We're going to be following it up to its close and then further into that, hopefully, mine life here at Golden Eagle. So appreciate your time.
All right, great. All right, thanks, Trevor.
Yep. That's your update from Mako Mining, everybody. They trade on the Venture with MKO and on the OTCQX with MAKOF, and they are looking to acquire Gold Source Mines. And that M&A deal announced this morning, Gold Source Mines trades on the Venture with GXS and on the OTCQX with GXSFF. The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.